Good evening, and welcome to What a World Radio. Celebrating diversity and loving it, this is Nevin Campanella bringing you a radio talk show that has no limits and bows to no one. From this microphone, we bring you guests who will lead you across those shadowy plains of forbidden knowledge. And out of the ordinary, I'm not going to jump right into my usual. I want to make an announcement, folks. There is an Amber Alert, and I want everyone to pay attention. This is coming out of Minnesota on a five-year-old child. The only thing I know about it is that there is a Dodge Ram pickup truck associated with this, and I think the year is 2003. Please forgive me for not having all the knowledge. I picked this up very rapidly tonight on CNN just before making this broadcast. Now, on our way, one of the more unusual areas of forbidden knowledge is the natural ability that some people have to predict earthquakes from changes in their physical health. And tonight's guest, Charlotte King, will help us understand that relationship between physical symptoms and earthquake prediction. If time allows, we will take some calls towards the end of the first hour. Our toll-free number is 1-888-268-4313. And our international number is 1-281-419-7697. But first, let's take a look at today's date in history. What happened on this date of November 27th in past years? Hey, remember Custer's last stand? 1868, the Indian Wars, Battle of Washita River. United States Army Lieutenant Colonel George Armstrong Custer led an attack on a group of Cheyennes living on a reservation. And in 1924, Macy's in New York held their very first Thanksgiving parade. Who was born on this day? Well, a very interesting individual, and you'd have to be over the age of 50 to know who it was. Bob Smith. Who was Bob Smith? I got to tell you, folks, he was a television cowboy. Mm-hmm. On what? On what, do you ask? All you youngins out there, remember the peanut gallery? Remember Howdy Doody? Yeah, folks, Bob Smith. They used to call this guy, sometimes refer to him as Buffalo Bob. You want to know why? He was born in Buffalo, New York. He died on July 30th, 1988, in, I think, North Carolina. Who else was born on this date? Famous Chinese-American martial artist Bruce Lee. He was probably one of the most influential martial artists of the 20th century. And many of you are going to know him for the very famous movie, Enter the Dragon. Some of you are also aware that he died rather strangely. His son also died rather strangely. Death. Well, you'd have to be a well-read reader to know the name Eugene O'Neill. On this day in 1953, he died. An American writer and Nobel Prize winner. Well, what is so remarkable about O'Neill was that he was able to introduce dramatic realism onto the American stage. His plays were typically about down-and-out characters, you know, people living on the fringe, people who were struggling to maintain hope and that kind of thing. But his most notable work, as anyone will tell you, was produced in 1946, called The Iceman Cometh. I'm not sure, but there might have been a movie made of that. I am really not sure. Who else died on this particular date? Very famous actor, 1988, John Carradine died. Now, John Carradine was probably one of the most loved figures in Hollywood, and he made a career out of making B-movies. Honestly, folks, that's what he did. He made a career out of making B-movies. He always played some sort of diabolical character or mad scientist. And he actually prospered in that. However, he also was included in some pretty cool movies like The Grapes of Wrath and also, I think, in The Ten Commandments. You'll know his son, John Carradine, from Kung Fu. And I think most recently, his son, John, played in the two movies, Kill Bill 1, Kill Bill 2. A little bit of current news on TNT Radio and TNT Today. TNT Radio is broadcast every day at 6 p.m. Central Time. And TNT Today is essentially a message board. No, you can't post on it. I only post on it. And I've been struggling with this in my head for the past week. This is going to develop, assuming that the producer, Mr. Don Newsom, goes along with it. This will develop eventually, I'm sure, into a much larger scale radio show, that whole TNT thing that I'm doing. Right now it's kind of small, but I'm telling you folks, it's growing in leaps and bounds. There is so much news from bloggers that it's like absolutely astounding. It's not only blogs, I'm not thinking about just any old blogger. I'm telling you folks that there are, in the general population, hundreds of thousands of extremely smart people. I mean, really, really smart. They need to be heard, and I'm going to do everything I can to make them heard. On to the news report. Toki Williams is in the news. The old gov in California, Schwarzenegger, is considering clemency, and you, everybody knows Tukey. He was the head of the Crips gang. I think he was convicted of a couple of murders. Anyway, he's been in jail for approximately 24 years. Let me read this to you. While in jail, he became an anti-gang activist, wrote children's books, and was nominated by a member of the Swiss Parliament for the Nobel Prize. If clemency is granted, he would remain in prison for the rest of his life, where he could continue his good works. He just wouldn't be killed. What is my reaction to this? Folks, up front, straight out, real clear, right from the hip, killing is wrong. Did you understand that part? Which part of that don't we understand? In the Bible, the Christian Bible, it says, thou shalt not kill. It doesn't equivocate. It doesn't say, unless you're a cool politician and you can kill off all our soldiers. No, it does not say that. It really doesn't. It just says, thou shalt not kill. Can you be a good Christian and kill? No. How's that, folks? Was that loud enough? Sunspot 822. This is amazing, this sunspot. For 2 weeks in November, this thing the size of Neptune was moving around the sun, and nothing happened from it. Nothing ever came from that sunspot. I was absolutely amazed. With the surge in hurricanes since 1995, droves of people moving to affected coastal areas and the federal government spending billions in storm relief annually, the question has rarely seemed so urgent. People talk about what is normal for hurricanes, but there's a new definition of normal now, said Roger Felke Jr., an environmental studies professor at the University of Colorado. This is out of people's range of experience. Oh, yeah, right. We don't have any weather change. Everything is normal. Right. Aha. Ask the people who live in New Orleans about that. Many storm researchers now agree that a decade or more of similarly rough seasons lies ahead. That's spooky, folks. I don't know what that really means, But I suspect that over the next few months, we're going to see some tough times in terms of the weather. Earthquake hits Turkey today in Istanbul. A moderately strong earthquake shook southeastern Turkey on Saturday, sending frightened residents out into the streets in panic. And just in, like 15, 20 minutes ago, a 5.9 quake in Iran tonight. Lots of stuff going on. What if it were possible to predict earthquakes? Our guest tonight, Charlotte King, will give us some insight into predicting earthquakes. Charlotte is best known for her accurate prediction of major eruption of Washington's Mount St. Helens, which erupted May 18, 1980. She was a mere 12 minutes off. This prediction threw her into the limelight and attracted the attention of scientists and journalists alike. She had incredible ears. Now, by that, something to do with sound. She picks up sound. She has been on a number of different television shows and radio shows, such as That's Incredible, In Search Of, PM Magazine, Merv Griffin, and in later years, shows like Sightings, Encounters, and The Other Side. Doctors, as well as the military, were perplexed by her unusual ability to hear sounds in the, here we go, alphabet soup, folks, ULF, VLF, and ELF ranges. She began hearing these sounds in mid-May 1976, and more recently, she provides Water World Radio with a regular weekly update on earthquakes and their relationship to physical symptoms. Tonight, she will cover this and much more extensively. Hello, Charlotte. Welcome to Water World Radio.
Hi, Nevin. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good tonight. We're storming down here in Utah. It's been storming on and off for the past 3 or 4 days. I'm tired of being wet.
Charlotte, well, we get that all the time in the winter here, so we're kind of used to it.
Yeah, you're up there in Foggy Bottom Northwest. I did spend some time up there, and I got to tell you, it's cloudy a lot. Charlotte.
You very seldom see the sun in the winter.
Yeah. Charlotte, I know you're well known in the media regarding your unusual ability to predict earthquakes, but some of our listening audience would appreciate a little bit of background on who you are and how did you acquire this ability.
Well, my name is Charlotte King. I am 59 years old. This started for me approximately mid-May of 1976. I was reading a book. I don't remember the title. And all of a sudden, I began hearing what sounded like foghorns. It was a sunny day here in Salem, Oregon, and I lived about a mile and a half from the river, and instinctively, I got up and walked to the window to see if I could see something, but obviously, a mile and a half from the river, I couldn't have seen it anyway, and we wouldn't have had boats with foghorns on the river to begin with. So I had no idea where the sound came from. I began soliciting the different places in the city, Environmental Protection Agency and various other environmental quality, things of that nature, trying to find out where the sound was coming from. Some thought it was coming from the vacuums at a turkey rendering plant about a mile from the house, and I knew it wasn't that. And then I was very surprised later after I began hearing it that no one else seemed to hear it except me. And I went through the normal medical tests. I had my hearing tested, just generally tested. I had a CT CAT scan, other things, because I was beginning to have some slight headaches. I didn't get headaches at that time.
Charlotte, let's drop back for a second. On those medical exams, my understanding is that your hearing range is actually a little bit different than the normal population.
Right. Well, after all these tests and everything were conducted and found to be basically normal in that sense, if you want to say normal, later on in 1980, before St. Helens went active, or before it went very active, I should say, I was tested at the Oregon State School for the Deaf, and they put me in a soundproof room, and played tones, and I would respond, you know, when I heard the tones and so on. But when they turned everything off, I could still hear the sound I'm hearing, and they immediately decided I had subjectinitis, which is sound generated within my own ear. And I said, no, that's not the case. And so that's what they put on the report, was subjective tinnitus. But later on, just prior to St. Helens eruption, Rick Tell from the United States Environmental Protection Agency in Las Vegas, Nevada, came up here at my request, and he began running some tests and found that the sound that I was hearing was real inside the booth and was many times stronger than what he would have expected it to be, especially in the frequencies below 100 hertz and even down to 10 hertz and below.
Yeah,
and so,
I understand that you could actually hear in the 2 to 7 hertz range.
That's true. And most people hear in the 25 to 32 hertz range. That's the normal speech. I hear 10 times lower than that, if you were going to say by, not by number, but by times, 10 times lower than that frequency. I hear subsonic sound.
Let me just define this for the audience.
Okay.
Folks, when we're talking about sound and hertz, one hertz, or you'll see it written capital H, small z, is one cycle per second. And humans can typically hear from 20 to 20 hertz. Charlotte actually can hear below 20, which is absolutely, to me, amazing. Go ahead, Charlotte.
Oh, that's okay. And so Rick wrote his paper on the report and sent me a copy that he sent to the State School for the Deaf and to some other government agencies. And he, in his report, stated that he felt that I was hearing sound that was actually coming in the booth. The booth itself was acting as a high bypass filter, which was blocking out all the high frequency, and so only the low frequency would be coming into the booth, and that's what I was picking up. And that brought into my mind, okay, even though I might not have great hearing, I can hear this particular sound. Perhaps people that are hearing impaired could also hear a low frequency sound, because they're not looking for anything in that frequency when they're testing people.
That could be. In fact, I might even be able to lend some credibility to that. What I've noticed in some of my own little research, I have a hearing problem,
mm-hmm.
is that it seems that men typically lose their hearing in the higher frequencies,
uh-huh.
and women in the lower frequencies. That's sort of what I've been coming across.
Right.
And so you having that kind of hearing really pulls you out of the norm, because women don't usually hear those lower sounds.
Right. And to me, they sound like repetitive foghorns over and over and over in different rhythms and different signatures or different groups of rhythms that I hear. And I hear 13 separate signatures or sounds together now. And each
Our producer knows why he hears sounds.
Right.
He thought it was too much beer, but it turns out he's just hearing in the lower ranges ambient noise.
That could be.
Yeah.
They found that when they did white noise and pink noise, it did not block what I'm hearing.
Well, now, in 1979, Charlotte,
mm-hmm.
you noticed that there was a change in pitch or rhythm.
Uh-huh. There was a drastic change. It woke me up in the middle of the night, scared the heck out of me.
Okay. What drew your attention to this, though? I mean, most people would not. In other words, I'm laying in bed at night. I'm kind of asleep. There's noise going on all around me. Mm-hmm. Why would you wake up?
Well, because the noise had already been going on for 3 years, day and night, 24/7, and all of a sudden it changed, and it was enough of a change to wake me up.
Ah, so it's constant is what you're saying.
Oh, I have it 24/7 all the time.
Ah, Charlotte, I had never understood that.
Yeah.
What you're telling me is, like, right now as we speak,
uh-huh.
if you move your attention to it, you can hear a sound.
If I pay attention to it. Otherwise, it's just there all the time.
And you then notice a change in what's there all the time.
Right. And at that time, I wasn't picking up 13 different signatures. I was only probably picking up two. And they were very strong, consistent, loud, vibrating sounds. And so when one of them changed pitch and rhythm, meaning rhythm in the sense of how long the tones were, it alerted me that something was wrong. And I woke up, and I was very frightened, and I called the ABC TV station in Portland, and I had been talking to them about the sound for some weeks and giving them reports saying every time the sound changes, there's a large earthquake within 3 days. But I had no idea where these quakes would take place at that time. I had not put together anything.
Charlotte, you used the word signature. Let's jump back over that because we probably lost some people on what you were talking about.
Okay. Signature, to me, okay, Northern California is three long tones. That's one signature. Southern California three short tones. Southern California is three long tones. El Salvador and San Salvador are, sounds like somebody honking a horn. That's a different signature. So I have 13 separate signatures that I hear all the time.
Well, do you spend time sitting down with paper and pencil and waiting for sound to change and then...
No, I just hear it. Like I was at my mother's yesterday, and I told her, we were just sitting there talking in the morning about, I don't know, about 9:30 or 10, and I said, I turned my head, and she said, what are you hearing? And I said, the sound changed. And she said, what are you hearing? And I said, well, it's very vibratory. I said, there's going to be a large quake close to a 6 or greater. It'll be in the water within 24 hours. I can't tell the location because I'm not getting symptoms. I'm just getting a sound change.
Okay. Well,
and that's what I was picking up about 9:30 yesterday morning.
There's two parts to this. There's a sound, which tells you something is going to happen.
Right.
And then a physical symptom, which gives you the location.
Right. And some locations I can pick up just by sound, and they don't have a symptom. And most of them are just symptom without sound. But when I have sound and symptom together, then there's never any choice of knowing where that event's going to take place.
Well, is this something that you simply... I mean, you didn't go to school for this, obviously.
Oh, heavens no.
Well,
it took a lot of time and a lot of listening. And also, a calendar, which is what I recommend to people that contact me and say they think they're sensitive. I tell them to get a regular calendar with the squares, the opening squares on it, and write in it when they have a symptom like a headache or a back pain or whatever that they don't think is a normal symptom for them or a normal pain. And then watch 72 hours and write down what they've heard about that took place. And that's what I did for over a year. And that's how I put together all my symptoms with what's happening.
Why is 72 hours so magic? I don't understand that.
I don't know. But I know it's 72 hours from the time the symptom appears until the event takes place. It's 12 to 72 hours. Give or take 12 hours. It could be a little less. And then there's usually a 12-hour lead time. If it's going to be a major event, I will get a 12-hour lead time to break it down even tighter.
Okay. In June of 79, you wake up from a sound sleep, and you call the ABC TV station and ask if something was happening. And you were
yes, I did. I talked to the news group at the newsroom, and I said, what's going on? And they said, nothing. And I said, well, something's happening. And they said, no. And I said, please check your wire service. And they looked, and they came back and said, nothing's on there. I said, no earthquakes. And they said, no. And I said, well, something really bad's going to happen. I said, I don't know what it is. But I said, I'm really scared. And I said, I can't stop crying. And I... was laying down watching TV because it was, I don't know what time it was, sometime around midnight, I guess, when I called them, and it was like 3 or 4 in the morning, and they came on with a ABC News special that there was a major beaching of whales occurring on the Oregon coast at Florence, and they were the sperm whales, which are approximately 20 to 40 feet long and weigh 20 to 40 tons each. And then I knew instantly that I was picking up the change, and then for some reason it clicked in my mind, and I thought, the whales heard what I heard, and they became confused, and they beached. It just fit. It just fit. And then I thought, but where did the sound come from? because I didn't know. And then 3 days later, there were four quakes in Big Bear, California. And I thought, ah, the sound, the earthquake created the sound affected the whale's beach, and it just fell into place.
Is there a relationship, Charlotte, around the planet of beached whales?
Absolutely. I would swear to it 100%. I have made five predictions for Northern California based solely on whale beachings.
Well, how could we, is there a place on your webpage or somewhere where you could demonstrate whale beachings followed up by earthquake? In other words,
I've got that information in some of my paperwork. I do not have it on my website, but I do. But the pilot whales, when the pilot whales beach on the East Coast, the quakes hit the Bay Area of California.
If we were to go ahead and possibly do something like a special Charlotte King website on What a World Radio, would you be able to provide us with some of that statistical data so that we could put it up there for people?
Yeah, if I can find it. I've got some of the lists. Yeah, I sure do. I've got so many boxes of stuff sitting around here that needs to be gone through, but I'm sure I could find enough to give you some good information on it.
Yeah, I think people would like to see that. It certainly would add to the credibility of what you're
saying. Well, I talked to the Massachusetts Cetacean Institute after this beaching, and I told them that my theory was the whales beach because of the earthquakes in California. And they said, well, that made perfect sense to them because the coastline here, the fault lines, they said, run perpendicular to the coast. And the way that the angle of the beach is, it would bring the whales in very easily. And, of course, the lower the frequency, the longer the wave, the further it travels. And so there's really nothing that can block the extreme low frequency. It's just like everything's invisible around it. You can't stop that sound. That's why they can't stop the sound I hear, because they have nothing that can block it. And so the whales, the sperm whales, hear at a lower frequency than most of the other whales. And they're very gregarious, and they will follow one another if there's something that one of them goes off to look at. So consequently, there might have been one or two whales in there that might have been just a little bit more sensitive than the other ones, and they were affected first, and then the rest of them just followed. And the medical exams and necropsies afterward, they found that there was nothing wrong with their hearing. There were no parasites in the ears.
Well, let's go back to that. I know what you're referring to, but the audience doesn't. What she's about to talk about is that when she first encountered that the whales were beached and came up with the conclusion that they were being confused by the sound, then she went and discussed it, but she was told that by the mammalogists in the area. What did they tell you?
They told me that the whales were either sick or following a dominant whale, or that they probably had parasites in their ears.
Okay.
And that caused the beaching. And I told them what I had believed and what I had gotten from the Mammalogy Institute. And a year later, I read an article in the paper, and it says, although the beaching had been a year past, the scientists were still not 100% certain of what caused the beaching, but their hearing may have been jammed by earthquakes being recorded at the same time.
Yeah, I checked I went on a Google and I tried to find this kind of information. There is absolutely no verification at all, folks, that parasites in whales' ears caused them to beach. None at all. This has not been verified. Why they said that to you, Charlotte? You know, they were just like everybody else, just taking a potshot guess and didn't want to listen to you as the expert.
That's it, because I don't fit in that little box they have.
Right.
You know, I haven't had the training. I haven't had the schooling. I haven't read the books. I just know.
Yeah, these people were full of horse feathers.
That's a good word.
The problem is, Charlotte, that people like that wind up saying things like that. Reporters pick it up, and pretty soon the world believes that parasites in a whale's ears are causing them to beach. Folks, that's just not true. It's horse feathers.
Well,
that's exactly
in 1984, when I was living in Sacramento, they were reporting in Santa Cruz, California, at the college there at Santa Cruz, that there was a major beaching of anchovies going on. It had been going on for about 3 days. I called the school and talked to the chancellor there, and I told him, I said, well, first of all, I said to him, how often does this happen? And he said, well, not very often, maybe once every few years. He said, we've only got a couple reports in the last 20 or 30 years of this happening. And I said, well, it's my theory that the anchovies are being affected by something happening in the area, and you're going to have an earthquake within 24 hours. And I said, the beaching will quit. Well, the next morning they had a 4.5 earthquake, and the beaching quit.
Well, what we need, I think, at this point is some really obsessive young people out there that would like to donate some time. Are you listening, folks? And help us put together a database system, maybe, or something where we can start collating this data between whale beachings and earthquakes, and then relate that also to physical symptoms. So if you want to get into action and you want to do something, help Charlotte out, just send me an email. Folks, I'm easy to find on the net. Just go to blogging service, What a World Radio. Just type my name into Google. You'll come up with some kind of email address and get into action and help us out here. Well, Charlotte, after speaking to Rick Lester in Menlo Park in California, what occurred?
Well, Rick told me that for him personally, Rick was a geologist I had been talking to. I had called him in August of 1979 after the beaching in Oregon, and I told him that that I was picking up a quake for that area, and that I thought it would hit within 12 to 72 hours, and I said it's going to be a felt quake, and he said okay, and he just sort of listened. He was polite, and then there was a beaching of pilot whales about a day and a half later on the East Coast. And I called Rick back, and I said, now I'm positive the quake is going to happen. You've got 24 hours. And the quake hit just right on the button, and it really shook them up at Menlo Park. It was over a 5.
Wow, absolutely amazing. For your information, Charlotte, I just received notice that we are also now live on the AM station 1690 in Omaha.
Oh, wow, so, cool.
Yeah, so it's not a very large station. I happen to know the owner of the station. It's called Robin Valley, and it's a small tower, but this is the first time that we are live on that system. So,
that's great.
Charlotte.
Got to start somewhere.
Yeah, you got to start somewhere, and again, if it wasn't for Don Newsom, none of this would be happening.
Well, thank you, Don.
Yes, thank you, Don. People are now finally starting to get some information. Guy, you should be really, really proud of yourself. I mean, it's amazing what this...
Hello? Hello?
I also said that... You can't hear me, Charlotte?
I can now.
Oh.
Lost you there for a minute.
All right. Charlotte, about headaches on a regular basis, mild chest pains, and what's happening in your life that that produced the stress?
Well, the headaches began in earnest in September of 1979. And I had major, major headaches, and earaches just came up like crazy, just major earaches. And then I began getting chest pain, and I got really frightened. I went into the doctor and had my heart checked. It was fine. I had my hearing tested, and the doctor said, no, there's no infection. Everything's fine. And I couldn't figure out what was causing the earaches in the heart. And then 72 hours after they started, there was a series of quakes in Italy. And I didn't really put too much stock in it until, you know, I thought, okay, 72 hours, that makes sense. And then I heard someone talking on the radio about the quake, and they said there was multiple reports of people complaining of earaches before the quake, and there were 3 people that died of heart attacks before the earthquake, not after, not during, before the earthquake. And then I knew that I had figured out that there was symptoms that go with geographical locations. And that's when I began really making note of the locations and the symptoms
now
and putting it together.
You made mention that there was a difference in the pain.
Yes.
Why don't you describe for us a little bit what you mean by that?
Well, the pain, if any one of you have ever had a really bad headache, okay, for all intents and purposes, I have had what I used to consider a major headache, now I consider it my everyday headache, consistently since the 16th of March of 1980. That's part of my daily life.
Well, Charlotte, that would make most people crazy.
Yes, that's true. And
it didn't
help me either.
What did that do to your life?
Well, I was married at the time, and I had three children, and the kids were pretty good. My husband at that time was very, how would I say this, is in early field of computer-type work. He was very computer-oriented, very scientifically oriented, and for him, if he couldn't see it, hear it, feel it, touch it, or taste it, it didn't exist. And that was nothing really bad against him. It's just the way he was. And
there
so
are a lot of people like that.
We had a real problem with this because, one, I had to quit my job. I couldn't work. I could barely take care of myself, let alone the children in the house. And the kids were being teased at school about things. Obviously, kids can be pretty cruel at times. Oh, yeah, well, did your mother tell you what your score on the test was going to be today? You know, that type of thing.
They got teased.
Oh, yeah, they got major teased. But when St. Helens became very active in 1980, and after the major eruption, my daughter, my youngest daughter, my only daughter, began to experience headaches. And I would keep her home. And the school knew what I was doing. We had talked about it. And they would call me and say, well, your daughter's home today. And I say, yes. And they say, well, they said, is it earthquake? And I said, yes. And they said, well, about half of the class is missing as well. It wasn't just her and me. It was many, many people were being affected by the volcano. And after the eruption and the subsequent events that took place in December of 1981, we decided to part company. And I filed for divorce. And I did something that was probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. I couldn't take care of the kids and or myself very well, so I signed the children over to him in full and gave him the house, and I moved.
Do you see them now?
Oh, yeah, frequently. Yeah, they're all here.
You mentioned your daughter having that.
She doesn't.
Pain.
She's not affected anymore.
Oh, she's not?
Nope, just when I was around her. That's the true Charlotte King effect. I make people ill. I mean, I make people sick.
Okay, you know what, folks? There is a term that was coined called the Charlotte King effect. Why don't you talk about that a bit, Charlotte?
Well, in all honesty, I pick up these things from all around the world, some of them very strong, and I get very ill. And if a person around me is sensitive, I make them just as ill as I am, just being around them. There are people, Nevin, in all 100% truth to you, I will tell you, there are people that get ill just talking to me on the telephone. There are people that can feel my pain when they open up my email on the Internet.
Well, anyone who's carrying around a migraine headache all day long, Charlotte, is bound to give off something.
Yeah.
But how
well,
do you...
Go ahead.
How do you maintain a daily life with that much pain?
It's hard. It's really hard because I work full-time. And I'm married again, and almost 20 years this time. And I was married almost 20 years last time. And I'm my mother's caregiver. I mean, she's able to care for herself, but I see her every day. And my husband is disabled. I'm also able to take care of him. And I work full time, and I do this other stuff, which is my real job. And so it's busy, but I know that there has to be a reason for all of this, and that I won't be given more than I can handle, although I don't always agree with that. But anyway, It's not easy. It really isn't easy.
The reason is what you're doing right now. At least I believe that.
That's true. And that makes it extremely difficult to go in there to work every day and sit there at a desk and answer the telephone.
I want to sidetrack you a little bit. You're not expecting what I'm about to talk about, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Go for it.
Charlotte, you and I, without mentioning names, are both familiar with a very nice lady up in the Northwest, empath. I want you to tell the audience a little bit, without mentioning names, your relationship with her and what she says to you about your particular mission in life.
Oh, wow. You did get me unexpected.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
I've known her for 31 years. She's a very special lady in my life. She is an empath. Empaths, they not only can pick up your energy and feel what's going on with you, this particular lady also does, for lack of another word, I'm going to say readings. I don't like the term channeling. But by giving her your name, she can give you what's going on in your life, what has happened in your life, what may happen in your life in the future. And she can do medical, or she can do jobs, or she can do family. She can talk about past lives and future lives. This woman is absolutely phenomenal. Just by your name is all she needs. And she told me that part of my destiny, for lack of another term, is to do exactly what I'm doing, that it was part of a larger picture. And there will be a time when I will not be able to live where I'm living, that I will have to move inland away from both oceans. She said, that doesn't mean that people living on the coast will not be able to survive. She said, you will not be able to survive.
That's a very interesting point, folks. Pay attention to that. What Charlotte is telling you is you don't have to move away from the seacoast. It was directed at her specifically and not all people.
Right. It was for my benefit. I needed to move away. And she knows that one time I was visiting her and I had been having a little bit more than normal headache. This would have been in 1980, and in July of 1980. And October of 1980, not July. And, excuse me, I was not feeling well, and she was sitting there. We were chatting away, and she'd changed chairs. And finally she said, Charlotte, go home. You hurt. And she just had to keep moving away from me in the house because of my energy at that time. And she said, go home and make cornbread. She said, you're going to need it very soon. She said, that's all you're going to be able to eat for 3 days.
Why cornbread?
Well, just like popcorn, I needed the corn.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. The audience doesn't know about popcorn.
Well, let me go forward with this first, and I'll talk about the popcorn. Anyway,
okay.
The next day, or not even the next day, that night, my migraine changed into a deadly, deadly sick migraine. And I had to go on, the doctor put me on Valium for 3 days. I was so sick. I couldn't even open my eyes. Tears would just roll down my face from the pain. And what happened is we had 13 major eruptions in 8 hours on the Galunggung volcano in Indonesia. And at the same time that happened, St. Helens had a 75-foot fracture in their dome. And so it hit with two simultaneous events at the same time. And she's right. All I could do was nibble cornbread for 3 days.
Okay, let's go on to corn. What is it about corn?
Corn, I found out, people crave corn products before a large earthquake. That doesn't mean that necessarily that you have to be a sensitive. People in general will crave corn before a large event, and that's because of the choline in the corn. The most logical form of corn for people to get at very easily is popcorn. And in queuing the people at Blockbuster Video and things where I used to live in West Salem, I found out that they could not keep enough popcorn on the shelves before Northridge. It was gone all the time. And before our quake in Salem, all the popcorn was gone off the shelves, and most of it was gone at Safeway and the other stores I checked.
That is absolutely amazing, Charlotte. Folks, the reason I brought up the empath is I wanted you to understand that Charlotte is not just sitting in isolation up in the Northwest monitoring her physical symptoms. She's a very active, active woman. Headaches and all, she's working, she sees people, and she talks to psychics, empaths. She tries to double-check her own information, is what we all should be doing. Now, in terms of this empath that we are talking about, I can tell you it's real. I called her. And, folks, this lady is amazing. Also, there is a place on What a World Radio website, whataworldradio.com. Search around in there, and I think it's under, somewhere on the top-line menu, you will find an address to contact this person. Go ahead, Charlotte. Continue on.
Okay. So, anyway, after that had happened, then there are times that I get really, really sick, and I think, now, is this me or is this earthquake? So I will call her up and ask her, because sometimes I don't know, and I may be ignoring a heart condition or a heart problem that is simply just an earthquake problem. So I'll call her up, and she'll be feeling fine, and I said, how are you? And she says, fine, till I started talking to you. And then she starts picking up my symptoms.
I should be checking myself over right now, I guess, right?
I guess so. So I asked her, I said, well, is that me or is that something else? She said, no, it's not you. You're fine. And then I would relax and just go back to doing.
Are you willing to take phone calls?
Absolutely. Please.
Okay.
I would love to hear from other people.
I don't know if anybody will call in, but I just asked the producer to go ahead and open the phone lines if somebody would like to talk to you.
That's fine.
You had an extremely interesting experience in a parking lot with a reporter. He wanted you to produce a certain look.
Okay. You're talking about before the eruption of St. Helens.
Yes.
This would have been on March 20th of 1980. I was sitting in the parking lot with a reporter from the San Francisco Examiner. And, in fact, this man later we found was one of the people they had to go in and bring out by helicopter at the mountain because he headed up there after he talked to me. And he got caught in the eruption. And
not a very smart newsman.
Not an intelligent man, no. Anyhow, we were sitting at the table and visiting and back and forth, and I was trying to give him the idea of what I was hearing. And at the time, the best way you could describe the sound I was hearing would be we had the glass pop bottles, and you take a 16-ounce Coca-Cola or Pepsi bottle or whatever, and you blow across the top of it, and you get that sounds like a foghorn effect.
Yeah.
And the reason that's called a beat frequency, because it's not a pure tone, it's a combination of tones, and it's very hard to duplicate. Anyway, I was blowing on the bottle, and he asked me, he said, well, is that what you hear? And I said, that's what I hear all the time. And so we were chatting away, and all of a sudden I grabbed my head, and he said, oh, he said, I want you to do some pictures like this. And he said, I said, what? And he said, well, grimace, you know, to take a picture. And I said, I don't do that. And he said, well, it's hard to explain to somebody by a photograph what you're going through. And I said, I am not going to sit there and make faces. You know, I'm just not going to do that. And then I was sitting there a little bit longer, and I grabbed my head again. And all this time it didn't let go, and I had tears in my eyes, and I was holding my head with my hands. And he said, oh, that's perfect. And I won't tell you what I told him, but anyway, I said, it's the mountain. And I grabbed the car keys and ran for the car and turned on the engine, turned the radio on, and the NBC radio station was just interrupting to say the volcano had had its first fracture, and it could now be called a volcano. Up until that time, it was just the mountain.
Charlotte, I have a constant hissing sound in both ears.
Okay.
I remember the exact day, the exact time that it started. It went on like a switch. And that was in 1977.
Okay.
Now, about 10 years later, I developed cluster headaches. I don't know if you know what they are.
I definitely know what cluster headaches are.
Okay. I go through a cycle with them. The cycle is so sporadic. I mean, you cannot tell when it's going to hit.
Right.
They just, and it's, and it'll last, the cycle, I'll go into a cycle, it'll last, when it first started, it would go on for like 4 to 6 months. Now the cycle is usually over within maybe 6 to 7 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I have never bothered to look at anything outside of myself. Is it possible that somehow this sound
something triggered
in my ear,
something triggered it?
Yeah.
What time of the year?
It was fall. It was late fall in Montana.
Okay.
And yeah, it was just starting to get cold, and I stepped off. I sat up in bed. It was the morning. I sat up. The alarm went off. I got up, getting ready to go to the office. I put my feet on the floor. I reached over to pick up a slipper.
Uh-huh.
And when I reached over to pull that slipper on, it went on like a switch. All of a sudden, I grabbed my ears. I didn't know what I was hearing. I thought I was hearing something outside the house.
Right, exactly. I know exactly what you're talking about.
And it has not stopped since. Now, it is true that there are fluctuations in it.
Right.
Every once in a while, it will make all of a sudden a different sound.
Right.
And I have never bothered to see if that different sound is somehow related to anything outside myself.
You should try that. It would be interesting to see.
You're really piquing my curiosity here, because some of the things that you've talked about do seem to relate to that. When the cluster hits, I mean, it hits. Some of the things that you've described, people, if you don't know what a cluster headache is, let me tell you, you don't want to.
Right.
It's beyond belief. The pain is short term. It only lasts about 30 minutes. But for that 30 minutes, it will take you right down to your knees.
Well,
okay.
The earthquake pain I get, or the volcanic pain I get with St. Helens, is always back of head, always left side. And if anybody has ever had an ice cream headache, that's what this is.
Yes, I think most people are very familiar with what you're talking about. And
that's the kind of pain that St. Helens causes. You cannot not know it's happening. But when it's Mount Hood or Mount Rainier or Mount Pinatubo or Mount Etna, it's the same pain, but it's on the right side of the head.
You mentioned one kind of an oddity. I think it's an oddity. On your website, you state nearly all the eruptions of 1980 were preceded by hail in West Salem.
Absolutely.
What does hail have to do with earthquakes?
Well, I think that Mount St. Helens makes its own weather. Because when Rick Tell was here from Las Vegas, Nevada, 2 days before the Rager eruption, it was in May, we were visiting, and I had the TV on and everything, and we were just talking, and all of a sudden it got really dark out, and one of the guys came in that was setting up some sound equipment outside, and he said, "It's hailing." And I looked out the window, and sure enough, we had hail. And we had hail before the major eruption, and we had hail on several, at least five of the other explosive eruptions that I remember. Beyond that, I was in California. I don't know what happened here. But we did have hail on at least, not counting the big one, at least five major eruptions.
Well, there is another interesting item on your website, something I have never heard about before. I don't know which part in time we're going to jump to here, but it has to do with Dr. Neville Pimstone.
Oh, Dr. Pimstone in California. He was at the UC Davis Med Center. And when I moved to California, the headaches of St. Helens kind of eased off a little bit because it went kind of quiet for a while. Then I began getting stomach pain. Now, let me tell you, if you've ever had ice cream headache in the back of your head, then experience hard labor in your stomach. I've had three children. I know what hard labor feels like. And that's exactly what this was hard labor. I'm talking about contractual hard labor because I had contractions. You could time them. And when I'd go to the hospital, they said, "Well, you're at your body, you know, it's like you're in labor." And I says, "I know, but I'm not pregnant." And they, you know, had to do their tests anyway to verify. And I said, "No, I'm not pregnant." And I said, "It's the mountains." And sure enough, within 72 hours, there would be a quake over 5 or 5.5 up in the Sierras around Mammoth or Mono or Bishop or one of those places up there in the Sierras. And Dr. Pimstone, this was about my fourth visit when I met him, and he came in and he says, "Well, my dear," he says, "I hear you're being affected by the environment." And I said, "Oh, thank you. How do you know?" And he said, "Well, I'm from Switzerland." And he said, "We have the fawns and the swanees." He said, "The winds that cause those, and people react the same way that you're reacting to the mountains."
Was it Switzerland or South Africa?
I'm sorry. I take it back. It was South Africa. I was thinking of another doctor. No, I was thinking of Dr. Lenander. No, this is Dr. Pimstone. He was South Africa. I do apologize. And he said that they have the phones and the swanies and that those winds cause or create the same symptoms in people that are sensitive in that area.
Well, in other words, you really have to find the right doctor.
Oh, that makes all the difference in the world. I had a very good doctor up until the last 6 years when he decided to leave the HMO I belong to, and I have not found another doctor since that I can talk to. When I ended up in the hospital by ambulance in 1998 based on a solar event, they had written on my chart before I ever got to the hospital, delusional.
Delusional?
That's what they said. And so because these men in the ambulance thought I was quote-unquote delusional, they didn't even never mind the fact they don't have the capability to even determine if I was sane or not. They took me to the hospital, and because they had delusional on the chart, that's what they put on my chart at the hospital.
Oh, folks, this is exactly how disinformation, misinformation, bad information gets carried on out to the public. You get somebody with a third-grade education that puts delusional down on someone's chart, and a scientific individual in a hospital takes it as gospel.
Well, what's even beyond that, Neville, is this same hospital since 1980 had been purchasing my list of symptoms and events and kept it in the emergency rooms because they were getting so many people in with the same symptoms. They had actually bought my list and put it on their wall.
Apparently, you have had contacts from other people with the same symptoms. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. Many. But when I'm having, for instance, if I were having extreme heart pains when St. Helens was active, which I did all the time, they would have multiple people coming in at the hospital with the same symptoms. And so in talking to some people there that were open-minded at that time, they purchased my pamphlet and kept it in the emergency room so they could kind of keep an eye on how many people were coming in with the same symptoms.
Why don't you talk about how people can get a hold of that pamphlet?
Well, they can contact me personally by email or by writing to me. My address is 4791 WB, capital W, capital B, Post, POST Drive, Northeast, Salem, Oregon, 97305. And that pamphlet is $30, and it includes 1 month of my email alerts that I send out, usually at least twice a week, sometimes many more times, depending upon the activity and how I feel.
Folks, I just want to let you know that if you want to get in touch and can't remember any of this information, get a hold of me, and I will make sure that you get in touch with Charlotte. Charlotte, you worked on a few shows, Sightings, Encounters, The Other Side. What was your experience like?
Well, Sightings was super. I mean, they were really great. I enjoyed doing that show. The first show I did was That's Incredible, and they were really nice. They came up here to Salem, and they filmed me here in Salem, and that was just it was in April of 1980, and that was before the eruption. And then I think one of the most interesting ones is I did with Leonard Nimoy was In Search Of. And I was sitting there in the park, and the same park where I was before, and all of a sudden the mountain just must have started doing something, you know. And I held my head, and I was sitting there listening, and I could had tears in my eyes. It was really, really painful, and they asked me what was, they said, all right, what's happening right now? And I said, the mountain's gone into harmonic tremors. And I said, that means an eruption's coming again. And they apparently wrote it down. I wasn't aware they did. I wasn't aware much at that point. And so when they played the show on television, Leonard Nimoy said, unknown to Charlotte, we were able to film her during one of these episodes and what she said. And he said, a call to the Cascade Volcano Center confirmed that the mountain went into harmonics at exactly the moment she said it did.
Well, you must have had his attention. Charlotte,
oh, I did.
We are out of time.
Okay.
That hour goes by so fast. I want to thank you for being on our show tonight.
Well, and thank you.
We will hear your regular weekly report to us next Sunday evening. Thank you.
Thank
and good
you
night
very
to
much.
Charlotte. And happy holiday to you.
Hey, you too. Bye-bye.
Folks, that was another fascinating journey into some very strange realms of knowledge. We are going to take a 10-minute break, and then we are going to come back with our weekly astrological report from Jill Campanella.
Tired of the same old plastic trophy award? For a unique awards or gift, call Eagle Awards in Montgomery, Alabama at 334-271-2277 between the hours of 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Their laser-engraved awards and gifts are unique, creative, and unmatched in workmanship. Talk to Steve for suggestions on getting a laser-engraved photo or browse the store's catalog at www.eagle-award.com. That's www.eagle-award.com. And how about a reward for your body? For millennia, savvy Chinese women maintain beautiful, young-looking skin well into advanced age. How do they do it? Their secret was a blend of exotic herbs now offered by Lamaze Beauty Products. Try the Lamaze Chinese Herb Body Lotion for smooth, firm, and youthful skin. You can view their product line at www.lamazebeauty.com. That's www.lamazebeauty.com. Or use their toll-free number, 877-604-6521. Their business hours are 8 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday, Pacific Time. Now, on the more serious side of life, did you know that each year, 182,000 women are diagnosed with breast cancer, and 43,300 die? Almost everyone knows someone whose life has been affected by a breast cancer diagnosis. Breast cancer is the leading cause of cancer deaths among women ages 40 to 55. Early detection is the key to survival, and mammography is among the best-known methods of early detection. Yet, 13 million women in the United States over 40 have never had a mammogram. With the simple daily click of a pink button at the breast cancer site, that's www.thebreastcancersite.com, visitors help provide mammograms to those in need. Visitors pay nothing, and funding is paid by site sponsors and benefits the nonprofit National Breast Cancer Foundation. While early detection is highly sophisticated for such problems as breast cancer, it is still in the infancy stage for those catastrophic events which affect large populations. Lately, it seems like there is a crisis on this planet of mega proportions on a weekly basis. A few weeks ago, it was Hurricane Katrina in the United States, and now it is the horrendous earthquake in Pakistan, which has devastated the population. So far, there are 40,000 dead and up to 4 million affected. Please spend a moment of your time at www.concern.net. That's www.concern.net, and learn how to get involved with helping those in need. The news leaves one with the impression that maybe our world is a bit screwed up. For myself, I believe that what we see and experience is part of the wondrous experiment of third dimension reality, and is part of a total divine plan of existence. In attempting to convey this idea, I wrote the following vignette regarding our seemingly imperfect planet. It is titled, The Perfectly Imperfect Cup of Tea. And of course, the actors on the stage, myself and my lovely wife Jill. Nevin and Jill had just sat down for a cup of tea at the Two Moon Tea House in the Enchanted Forest. He was feeling a bit cavalier and decided to order something different. How about trying something different? Asked Nevin. With a quizzical look on her face, Jill said, Okay, but you know you're not real big on change. That's not entirely true, answered Nevin. I just don't like unexpected changes. Looking over the menu, Nevin spots a tea with an unusual name. Hey, look at this, he exclaims while pointing at the menu. Now what the hell could that mean? I have no idea, answered Jill. That is really weird. Now why would anyone name a tea the perfectly imperfect cup of tea? Who cares? Let's order it, answered Nevin. Not wanting to seem stodgy, Jill agreed. The waiter was quite pleasant and within minutes brought two steaming, perfectly imperfect cups of tea to their table. At first they were a little hesitant, as one might expect, but soon they were sipping tea and deeply engaged in pleasant conversation about their last vacation. Just as Jill was about to ask Nevin where he might like to take their next vacation, she noticed a rather sour look on his face. Something wrong? She asked. Well, yes, now that you mention it, this tea's a bit bitter. Then reaching for a packet of sugar, he said, Maybe this'll help. Jill seemed content with her tea and watched as Nevin began pouring the sugar into his cup. After a few tentative sips, he said, Damn, the tea is still bitter. Something is wrong with this tea. After adding numerous packs of sugar with no change in the bitter taste, he then stood up and waved at the waiter in an attempt to get his attention. Seeing Nevin's distress, the waiter quickly went over to their table and politely asked, Is there a problem? Hell yes, there's a problem, shouted Nevin. There's something wrong with this tea. Looking at his cup, the waiter said, Well, it looks okay. What's wrong with it? It's bitter. And no matter how much sugar I put into it, the damn thing still tastes bitter. In fact, it seems the more sugar I put into it, the worse it gets. Of course it's bitter, said the waiter. That is what you ordered. With an indignant look, Nevin said, It most certainly is not what I ordered. I ordered the perfectly imperfect cup of tea, not bitter tea. But, answered the waiter, that is why it's called perfectly imperfect. It will never suit your taste. Not quite satisfied with the answer, Nevin asked, But I added sugar, and the damn thing is still bitter. Obviously, something is wrong with the tea. Of course it's bitter, replied the waiter. If you wanted a perfect cup of tea, then that is what you should have ordered. Nevin was getting frustrated with the conversation and asked, What the hell difference does it make? If I put sugar into something, it should get sweet. With a sigh of exhaustion, the waiter said, Sir, no matter how much sugar you put into it, it will never quite suit your taste. It is the cup you ordered that keeps it imperfect. And the more you attend to the tea, the greater the imperfection. And you did order the perfectly imperfect cup of tea. If you wanted imperfect tea in a perfect cup, you should have said so. This little view of life over ordering a cup of tea is my explanation of why things are the way they are. It may not satisfy the internal quest for the reason for existence, but it does address a small, essential component of our thinking. Sometimes we get the idea that somehow our world is out of balance. There is nothing out of balance, and everything is, in fact, perfectly imperfect, because that is why we are here in this particular dimension, to be entertained and, if possible, learn from the imperfection. If you want something different, then you must change cups. Attention to the original order will only produce more of the same. As an example, a dimension, or the cup, if you will, designed to produce controlling, non-caring world leaders will not change in design because you vote for different leaders or engage in demonstrations against those in power. The cup is designed so that regardless of what you do, you will get what you ordered, and that is an existence of controlling, non-caring world leaders. In other words, you must change your order, or your intent. Now, the really tricky part of this is to recognize that it is your intent that is, in fact, the cup.
We're back, folks, and welcome back to What a World Radio. Tonight, we have Jill Campanella to give us an astrological report. Jill came onto the radio the first time last week, and she is now becoming much more involved in doing astrology for What a World Radio. Jill, how are you this evening?
I'm great. Just great. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. And what do the stars tell you about our planet and people?
Well, let's see. Just one second here. Well, for one thing, you had mentioned something a few weeks ago that I'd like to address now. It's about the outer planetary aspects that were similar in the late 1930s to the rise of Hitler in Germany. And for the past several years, many astrologers compare the energies of that period with the present times, as these energies again present themselves, only this time they're focused with the rise of George W. Bush and the United States as a world power, reflecting a desire for domination. When I read about this, I had reservations, but now there seems to be a lot of truth in what these forecasts were speaking about. Again, as last week, I find the use of Sabian symbols, first developed by Mark Edwin Jones, amazingly valuable in obtaining insight into the purpose and personality of natal charts.
Why don't you describe for us what you mean by Sabian symbols? What are those, Jill?
Sabian symbols. Sabian is an ancient word related to the Sumerians, and you find it again in old texts around the time of Moses, having to do with spiritual seekers, again in the Essenes. The word Sabian is used. Now it's used as an oracle to gain insight into spiritual aspects of astrology.
Can you give us an example of a Sabian symbol?
Sabian symbols are, there's one little vignette for each of the degrees in a circle. That's 360 degrees. Mark Edwin Jones developed those by meditating on each of those degrees, coming up with a vision, a little vignette, as is what the his Sabian symbol site calls them, little vignettes. When I first found out about them, they didn't make a whole lot of sense, but the more that I use them, the more valuable I find them.
Wonderful.
Well, this evening I'd like to use natal charts of four Cancer sun signs. One of the United States chart, the second George W. Bush. Sylvester Stallone, by the way, was born on the same day, a few hours later, about 12 hours later, also on the East Coast. And His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama was born on July 6th.
Are you saying that Bush, Stallone, and the Dalai Lama all have the same birthday?
Yes. They all have the same sun sign. They were all born on July the 6th. And the United States, of course, was born on July 4th of 1776. The United States and George Bush have a lot in common. The sun for the United States is at 13 degrees, 19 minutes, Cancer. And the Sabian symbol is the 14th degree of Cancer. It's a very old man facing a vast, dark space to the northeast. That's also the same degree for George Bush. Now, that suggests something ancient, and dark space into the unknown. Sylvester Stallone, born that same year, about 11 hours later. His sun is at 14 degrees, 15 minutes in Cancer, and the state's soul, the Sabian symbol, would be the 15th degree of Cancer. And that's a group of people who have overeaten and enjoyed it.
That sounds like Sly Stallone.
So that is certainly a lot lighter than the choices made by the President of the United States and His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama. So it's suggestive of a lot more responsibility in their sun sign, which is their purpose. In Sylvester Stallone's moon, which is in Libra, as is the president's, Sylvester Stallone's moon is at 22 degrees, 46 minutes Libra, and the Sabian symbol is a chanticleer salutes the rising sun with exuberant tones. A chanticleer, by the way, is a bird. It's specifically a cock, a rooster, especially in the fairy tales. I think that's pretty self-explanatory for Sylvester Stallone. And for President Bush, the moon is lost. Just a moment.
Hold on, folks.
Okay, I have it. That is at 16 degrees, 42 minutes, Libra. And that Sabian symbol for the 17th degree is a retired sea captain. So you have a reserve president in knee-jerk reactions and emotional tones. Even though the moons are in the same sign, it has quite a different tone for George Bush than Sylvester Stallone. In both charts, there's aspects that suggest that both boys as youngsters probably experienced their parents having different ideas about how they were to be raised. With the president, I would guess, and I think it would be a good guess, that his father was the more influential of the two, where in Sylvester Stallone, it was more likely to be his mother, also an astrologer. And let's see, her name is Jacqueline Stallone, and she's a Sagittarian. I think she had more input. I also find it interesting for the Dalai Lama, the moon was in Virgo, and it was exactly conjunct Neptune, which was an expression of a generation that was had visions of balancing the spiritual and the mundane. So the Dalai Lama's emotional tone matched that of the time. And that symbol, it is a powerful statesman wins to his cause, a hysterical mob. That was an uncertain time. Hitler rose to power around 1938-39. The message of the East and Buddhism would not have been brought to the Western world if it wasn't for the upset of China and the betrayal of the Dalai Lama's own people that booted him right out of China and made a lot of valuable information available to the Western world. And if not for that turmoil and that trial, we would never, well, I wouldn't say never, but we certainly wouldn't have had access to the wonderful information that Eastern theology provides us. So here we have four different cancers. They're all of the same day, but with very different personalities and purpose. The purpose may be the same. The sun is in Cancer. The purpose is to nurture. But the manner in which it's done and the emotional tone and the reason for doing it is very different in all four of these Cancer charts. There is one aside I've noticed. The galactic center. The galactic center, according to the ephemeris, is currently 26 degrees and some odd minutes in Sagittarius in January of 2001, 26 degrees, 51.8 minutes. December of this year, 26 degrees, 55.9 minutes. In October 2010, it will reach 27 degrees and 0 minutes Sagittarius. And also in late December of 2006, the most outer planet in our solar system, the planet Pluto, will reach an exact conjunction or co-join the galactic center.
What does that mean for us?
Massive changes. We're already seeing that with Pluto and Sagittarius. And like Uranus that we discussed last week, wherever that transformation is in your house, wherever Pluto is, whichever house that you have Sagittarius as the ruler, that's where you will experience turmoil, upset, and transmutation. I find that exciting. The galactic center is currently at the 27th degree of Sagittarius, the Sabian symbol being the sculptor's vision is taking form. In October of 2010, it will hit the 27th degree and the symbol for the 28th degree of Sagittarius, an old bridge over a beautiful stream. That suggests to me that there is a bridge, and it's an old bridge, an ancient bridge with ancient knowledge over a beautiful stream of life and evolution for the planet and everything that lives on the planet.
It sounds wonderful.
Including our solar system. Our solar system in the Milky Way galaxy travels around other galaxies towards the galactic center, just the way the planets travel around the sun that travels with the galaxy that goes toward the galactic center and towards the year 2012. I also discovered something interesting. This evening, I'd like to mention the charts of a set of twins that have allowed me access to their birth data to compare the differences between twins. And the major difference is in the ascendant of these twins. Both suns are aligned with the galactic center at the 27th degree of Sagittarius. The sculptor's vision is taking form. The first twin, ascendant, he was born a few minutes early, by I think 4 minutes, is at the 26th degree, which says a flag bearer in a battle. The second born twin's ascendant is 27th degree of Sagittarius. The sculptor's vision is taking form. Now, these twins are triple Sagittarius. That means their ascendant, their sun, and their moon are all in Sagittarius, as well as some personal planets.
What does that mean in terms of their personality?
It means they are loving, giving. They will tell you the truth. They are willing to share everything they own. They search for wisdom and truth. And as far as I know, these twins are acting upon that in the way of assisting other people to live more harmonious lives and allow information to be brought to them so that everyone can get to the galactic center and we can all see what's on the other side across this very old bridge that's over our beautiful stream of humanity. So that's, I found that out in looking at George Bush's chart and the Dalai Lama's chart. And it's all connected. The leaders, our world leaders, have a lot of responsibility for our planet, and I pray for them that they'll have clear thinking and receive the insight necessary to bring about peaceful resolution. It has been a tough month. Mercury has been retrograde. That means it's appeared to stop, and then it moved backwards for a while. That was on December 13th. It entered Scorpio yesterday, and it won't resume forward motion until December 3rd, when then on December 12th it will again enter Sagittarius. So this is a strong indication that sometime during that week there'll be more light shed on information that's been hidden from public awareness. Whatever's been in the news, there'll be even more discoveries.
So sometime around between the 3rd and the 12th, we're going to see some amazing things happen in terms of revelation?
News, probably, I suspect, as relating to our company or our country, it will be political. The skills that Washington is going through now have been discussed by major astrologers, and they most agree that Washington, D.C. is in trouble, and the leaders of our country are in trouble. So that's about all I have to say for now. I'm getting a little hoarse, so it's time to quit.
Well, thank you for the report, Jill. Bokshi talked about a set of twins, and rather an amazing set of twins who seem to revolve around Sagittarius. I'm going to leave it up to the audience to guess. just who those twins are. Folks, it's been a fascinating journey. I could do this all night. That ends our show for tonight. Until next time, this is Nevin Campanella wishing all of you health, happiness, and a safe journey on your chosen path. Good night.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.